Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Breda Pest Management, the official pest control of UGA Athletics.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I thought that really one of the most fun things about G-Day a couple of Saturdays ago was the way in which it confirmed some of the things we've been hearing during spring practice. And one of the things we talked about on our Dog Nation postgame show on that particular Saturday was, hey, we heard about Colby Young, you know, being a weapon in the red zone and being an important target. And despite the fact I think he only had three catches during G-Day, two of them were really very significant and kind of showcased the long body and the penchant for just going and getting the football that had made Colby one of the most talked about players during spring practice. And I thought that was really fun. I mean, for a multitude of reasons, receiver was probably the position that was talked about the most for Georgia in these types of conversations in media or fans on social media or just Georgia fans kind of getting together for like a pregame tailgate or something like that. There was probably as much talk about wide receiver as perhaps any other position, more so in most cases. And when Kirby Smart got his turn at all of this, he gave that group, I think, a really interesting compliment. The question was about Colby Young, the name I mentioned a moment ago, but in talking about Young, Kirby gave the kind of compliment to receivers that you sometimes don't always hear. I thought this was pretty compelling. This was Kirby Smart from G-Day a couple of Saturdays ago. Listen and see if you notice what I do. This from Kirby Smart.
Well, first and foremost, I think all across the board, our wideouts may be our best leadership group. O-line, maybe. And then receiver. Like, they have some really good core leaders. Well, he is, he's integrated himself into that group really well. He's not, you know, the alpha leader. He's a quiet kid. But you know what impresses me about him is he's showing up in special teams. I'm like, when you show up on special teams and you show a commitment to locking and holding people up, he's been a really good special teams player. And we sold him that, hey, if you came here, you had to buy into those values. It's made him tougher, more physical. He's a big body. He's a tough matchup for all teams. I'm pleased with where he is. But, you know, he still has work to do in terms of learning. I look at him like Rara last year. This time last year, Rara didn't understand the offense. He couldn't line up and execute all the time. Rara's not playing it wrong. We didn't have to give him as many reps. We didn't have to give Arian as many reps. But Colby did a nice job.
So I think the fact that Colby Young does bring, as Kirby Smart says there, that big body into the Georgia receiving room, that's one of the reasons why I think he can be such a game changer for this group. And that's some of what we saw there on Saturday. But more important than that, did you hear Kirby Smart saying that right now he sort of feels like wide receiver overall is Georgia's best leadership group, and that Colby Young is not only fitting in terms of the offensive game plan and getting a chance to be productive, but also kind of fitting in from that leadership standpoint as well? I find that to be worth diving into a little bit, because I think that Georgia is in the midst of reinventing itself offensively. And I know sometimes on shows like this, we kind of talk about storylines as it relates to one team, the way we do with Georgia football. Some of this stuff gets said so frequently that it kind of gets, I think, it's almost like it hides in plain sight after a while. And we know that for Georgia offensively, this is going to be the first year for the program without Brock Bowers. Now, Bowers was injured some a year ago, so not always fully healthy, not always fully available to Georgia. But over the course of three very successful seasons, which included two national championships and a 30-game winning streak, the fact is Brock Bowers was as productive a player that Georgia has probably had since Herschel Walker, I guess. I mean, this is one of the greatest players in program history. This is a Mount Rushmore figure in Georgia's very, very storied history. That's what Brock Bowers is. And so now it's life without Bowers. And obviously it helps to have, you know, Carson Beck at quarterback. We're going to talk more about Beck tomorrow. That's obviously really helpful. But Beck's got to have guys to throw it to. And, you know, it's just not often you're going to have as capable of a pass-catching target as what Carson Beck had a year ago and Brock Bowers, what Stetson Bennett had for 2 years prior to that. So I would say this is a very good time to have a group of wide receivers who were as capable of leaders as any other position group, and perhaps more so based on what Kirby Smart said there. This is a very good time to have that. And if we're just being honest, it's like, you know, sometimes that's not exactly what we sort of expect receivers to be. We expect, you know, Kirby compared to offensive line. That's a position where sometimes you get leadership from. Sometimes you think about that coming from the quarterback position. Receiver sometimes by, you know, I guess caricature that gets drawn, maybe unfairly, but the caricature that gets drawn is, oh, these are the guys that care about their stats. These are the guys that are all about the NIL. These are the guys that can transfer at a moment's notice. That's what those guys are. But apparently that's not what Kirby Smart says that he's seen from his wide receivers here this spring, and Colby Young is a part of that. And to reiterate what I said a moment ago, never a better time in Georgia's recent program history to have those kinds of things being said about the wide receiver group. Now, as far as the other stuff that Smart had on his mind about this position group on the other side of G-Day, this is what else he had to say about the evaluation of kind of where that group stands post-spring ahead of a very important 2024 season coming up. This is more of Kirby Smart talking about the wide receivers.
I know the first level, let's call it the first four guys, five guys deep, it's very experienced, like very experienced. And then after that, it's like, I'm still trying to figure out what we got. You know, there's young players that are talented. Sokovia and Nitro are going to be good players. The poor guys are still coming along, Mike Jackson and London, and then Colby is factored in and made some plays. Colby's made plays like he made, like that all spring, and then when you throw the Rob Dillon, Arian, and Dom out there, it gives you a – what they are is the, like, the bullies. They bully on special teams. They lead. They show toughness. And that's usually your defensive back group. And for us, right now, it's our wideouts.
So, once again, that's Kirby Smart kind of reiterating something there of this is a group of guys playing like bullies, and I think he means that in a very complimentary way. How often do you hear that said of wide receivers? But that's what he's saying about this group right now. And I love the fact they've got some of that intangible stuff going on in a time in which so much is going to be asked from them, kind of tangibly speaking. I really like that a lot. And I joked about this with Connor Riley the other day on the show. When it comes to this time of year, as we kind of move post-spring in towards the summer, we have a tendency to sort of bet the over on every individual Georgia player. You know, we talked yesterday about Branson Robinson going to have 1,200 yards. We have a tendency to sort of think about these big numeric goals for every individual Georgia player, and we see the talent they possess. It becomes pretty easy to say, well, of course that's possible. Of course that could happen, and maybe it's even likely. When it comes to these receivers overall, though, you know, Kirby Smart says, I'm actually not 100% sure what we have in all of these guys, and I think it's important for Georgia fans to keep that in mind, too, that not every kind of high-end projection for every one of these receivers will end up coming true. Coming off of G-Day, it looked like Anthony Evans could be a really good player. Perhaps he will be. It looked like Dominic Lovett might be one of the best receivers in the SEC. Perhaps that'll end up being true, too. You know, Terrence Edwards has talked a lot about Ra-Ra Thomas as of late. And Kirby Smart himself says, hey, that's a guy that's a lot more comfortable in this offense now than he would have been this time a year ago. You know, Dylan Bell has shown you in actual real games against live competition everything that he's capable of being. Colby Young, we've certainly talked plenty about him there too. And kind of on and on you could go. Not every receiver is going to end up being as good or as successful as we believe they possibly could be. But I do think you put a lot of faith right now in the long list of names and saying that, to use the kind of numbers that Smart mentioned, four, maybe five guys who are really capable and ready to be contributors. It certainly seems like Georgia's got the potential of doing that, and a group of guys that could help fill some of that statistical void left behind because Brock Bowers is now moving on to the NFL. But when you listen to those clips from Kirby Smart, it becomes really important to kind of hear them for what they are. It's not just talent. It's not just guys looking for touches. It's not just players who can demonstrate their NFL future. It's also players who are serving as leaders right now, players who are demonstrating toughness right now. That Georgia, in the Kirby Smart era, just to be frank, has not always been defined by its wide receiver room. And I still think this year there are other position groups that will probably end up being maybe more important to Georgia's overall success than receivers are. But it sounds like in terms of how you're contributing to team chemistry, and how you're demonstrating the kind of trademark toughness that Georgia has been about under Smart, that right now the wide receiver room is making an incredible contribution towards that ultimate goal. And if you're a Georgia fan, I do believe you should take that right now as very, very good news. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Breda Pest Management. And happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us, live on video. Normally, we're live 10 a.m. this week, pre-recorded, enjoying our Dog Nation cruise. We're on the second to last day of our Dog Nation cruise, I guess, here today. We'll sail back on Friday. You know, we'll get off the ship on Friday. Thursday is perfect day, Coco K Day. Today, just enjoying some time and embracing the best that Allure of the Seas has to offer. So we're doing that. Hundreds of folks on board with us and having a great time, and we appreciate you. If you couldn't be there with us, we appreciate you being here right now. And we appreciate our friends at Breda Pest Management, who make it all possible. The official pest control provider of UGA Athletics. That is what Breda Pest Management is. So many of you were at Sanford Stadium this, you know, a couple of Saturdays ago for G-Day. You saw, you know, half the stadium is still kind of under construction as the new press box and some luxury areas are being kind of added there. And as you see all that work being done and you see all those fans sitting in the stands, don't forget the pest control provider making sure that Sanford Stadium stays bug-free and critter-free and termite-free, maybe most importantly. That is our friends at Breda Pest Management. This time of year, I am driving around all the time. And I'm doing baseball with my son or gymnastics with my daughter, or we just got so much stuff going on in our house these days. Seems like everybody probably does. But as we're doing all of that, it's amazing to me how frequently I see those Breda Pest Management trucks going all over town there as well. They're out there taking care of folks, and they've been doing that. 125 of those people been doing it since 1975. That is how Breda Pest Management got recognized as the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics. And that legacy of service they want to put to work there for you, to take good care of you, obviously, and make sure your home stays termite-free and bug critter-free there too, but also put more money back in your pocket. Y'all, things are just expensive these days. So anything you can do to save yourself some money is going to be a really good decision. And that is what Breda Pest Management offers for you. When you make the switch to Breda Pest Management, you're going to put more money back in your pocket just for making that decision. Perhaps you keep getting the letter in the mail from that termite company you've been working with telling you your cost of service is going up, even as the quality of the service may be going down. But with our friends at Breda Pest Management, that's not going to be a problem. They're going to put more money back in your pocket. They're going to take great care of you, just like they do for Sanford Stadium and Foley Field and Stegman Coliseum and all of the other athletic venues there around the University of Georgia. So make the switch today. Find them online, bredapest.com. That's B-R-E-D-A, bredapest.com, for a lot more on that. Great to have the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics bringing Around the Doghouse to us here today. All right. So we just talked a moment ago about the Georgia wide receiver position. And as we shift here to Around the Doghouse, I want to spend some time also talking about a little bit of a follow-up on something that we talked about a lot going into G-Day, that we would say our number one spring concern for Georgia was, how do you make sure you're as good as you can be along the defensive line? And to be frank, this year, as good as you can be, may not be what Georgia was in 2021 when it had four eventual first-round picks playing on its defensive line, or as good as it was in 2022 when it had Jalen Carter, who pound for pound may have been the single most talented player in all of football playing along its defensive line. Georgia may not quite be defensive line at that level in this upcoming season, but it also doesn't have to be as good as those groups were. It just simply needs to be better than the teams that it's playing. And how good then can this Georgia defensive line be for this season? Can it be as good as it needs to be? I don't know that G-Day fully answered all those questions. I think it was a pretty good day for the Georgia defensive front overall. I don't know that it completely answered the questions of, you know, what this Georgia defensive line could be. But there were some evidence that boy, good things could be in store here for this team. And as you kind of do your own personal inventory of what you saw from Georgia this spring, what you had demonstrated there on G-Day, there's the list of names that just sort of pops up, individuals who I think made an impact. And there is the need for not just quality starters, but quality depth for Georgia, rotating a lot of guys in. And in some cases along the defensive line, this is going to be newcomers playing just a little bit more and having a more significant impact than they've had in the past. And one of the guys, based on what we saw from G-Day, who seems to be ready to do that, is Gabe Harris. Harris is a very interesting player from for Georgia. And at a position, a guy like Trayvon Walker once used as a springboard to become an eventual number one overall pick, Harris is going to get a chance to do that, at least some. I know he's cross-trained a little bit, but he's going to get a chance to do some of that for Georgia, the defensive in spot some this year there as well. And so with that in mind, Kirby Smart saying some very nice things about Harris after G-Day, I think this is pretty important because as you think about how Georgia gets back to the great level, sort of a greatness level at the defensive line, big-time impact and big-time contributions from guys like Harris, it's going to be really important. So very nice words from Kirby Smart about a guy like Gabe Harris after G-Day a couple Saturdays ago. This is what Kirby Smart had to say.
Oh, yeah, good day today. I can't say it's going to spring like that, but he was disruptive today. He's twitching. He's hard to block. I love the way he plays. But he sometimes plays out of control, which can be a good thing. It was good today on some plays. But it also, for the play of the game, he screwed up with wrong way, didn't line up right. So sometimes you don't know what you did today, but you do get great effort, and you do get great toughness. And I love that.
When Kirby Smart says, I love the way so-and-so plays, that means that guy's going to be a pretty good football player. Or at least that means that guy has a chance to be a very good football player because Kirby Smart doesn't throw compliments around like that very lightly. And he also called him, disruptive and twitchy and hard to block. Sign me up for more of that. That's exactly what you need on your Georgia defensive line right now. And I do think this is a big task for this team here this year. We'll fixate a lot on Carson Beck. We just talked about wide receiver. We'll get into, what Georgia's adding and losing the transfer portal. We'll do all of that. But I think the mission of getting back to the national championship level, in some respects, sort of begins and ends with being the kind of dominant defensive line that Georgia was during its national championship seasons. And last year, that crown of best defensive line in America was probably ceded. It was probably given to Michigan a year ago, and perhaps not coincidentally, Michigan also the team that won the national championship. So how do you get that back? How do you take that belt back as the title of best defensive line in America? You get big contributions from disruptive, hard-to-block, twitchy players such as Gabe Harris. So on the list of guys that could be ready to go for the Georgia defensive line and restoring the greatness that unit has become famous for, maybe Gabe Harris is one of the guys that could be able to do that. Certainly fun to consider that as we roll towards the upcoming season. Of course, we're rolling along here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management here as well. One of the things that will continue later on is something we've been doing this week. For some of our shows, obviously when I've been away, we've done kind of a Kaylee's Corner. That's been really fun. And this week, kind of combining Kaylee's Corner with Cruiser on the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, it's been kind of a fun thing. We're gonna do that here coming up in just a few minutes. But before that, let's keep the conversation going right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
While you hear this and see this, just know that Mike Griffith and I are together on board Allure of the Seas for our Dog Nation cruise, and we're certainly excited about that. But me personally, I'm excited right now because Mike good enough to also join us for a little conversation here the day before the NFL draft. Now, I am not one to try to pull the wool over the eyes of our audience. We, for the most part, operate with total transparency here. This is actually take two of this conversation. Mike and I had this conversation the day before, too. And about once a year or so, this happens. A little gremlin gets in the machine or, who knows what. Just to keep us honest, just to keep us humble, we'll have a little bit of a glitch. And so we're actually having this conversation for the second time, which, Mike, you've been around the media landscape long enough to know that's a lot of pressure. When you do something for a second time, you've already done for a first time, there's always the risk that it's going to feel more forced or it's going to feel not quite as good. I think you and I both are pretty happy with the discussion that we had yesterday. And so now we have a little bit of internal pressure here to kind of deliver this again in kind of, in actual fashion, what ended up being sort of a glorified dress rehearsal yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, you know, some things obviously, you know, one day it looks one way, the other way it looks the other. But I think pretty consistent in our thoughts and in our agreement. I mean, look, Georgia football is in a great place, Brandon. It's hard right now to say anything too critical or not be optimistic and not appreciate the achievements and the opportunities the guys going to the NFL are going to have. So it's a really good place for Georgia football. It's a lot of fun to be talking about this program right now.
So you say that, and I would agree with you, and yet when you follow a lot of these sort of like, I don't know, math nerd NFL types or draft nicks or some of these people who sort of live and die with the NFL draft, it sort of seems like they love nothing more than nitpicking and, well, they just say that, blah, blah. You know, it's just like, you know, there's a lot of like skepticism in the pre-draft conversation. And one day ahead of the NFL draft, I want to address some of that with you here, because for the most part, I would say that Brock Bowers, who we assume is going to be the highest drafted Georgia player, for the most part, he seems to have weathered that storm. You know, there are some questions being asked of him the same way there are of every draft prospect. And listen, I totally acknowledge that when you invest, you know, eight-figure sum of money and a lot of draft capital in a player, you ought to be kicking the tires and you ought to be doing your due diligence. How well do you think that Bowers has overcome some of the natural poking and prodding that seems to happen with almost any kind of consensus first round pick? How do you think that Bowers has kind of come through this car wash?
I think he's done well. You know, he went to the NFL combine, even though he didn't work out there because of the lingering hamstring. And of course he was at Georgia Pro Day. Again, the hamstring still an issue. And Brock was a little edgy, not being able to work out. He wanted to be out there on the field with his teammates. I mean, that's the kind of guy Brock Bowers is, right? He doesn't go to games to watch. He goes to partake. And so I think it was hard. But, you know, earlier this month, he had a private workout alongside of Marius Mims, and Carson Beck threw the ball to him. And from all indications, it went well. He also did a 4.53 40, Brandon, which, you know, would have been the second fastest among all the tight ends at the NFL draft this year. I want to say the average 40 for a tight end at the NFL combine is between 4.7, 4.75. So obviously he has elite speed. You know, we know he's an adequate blocker. I don't know who would want to utilize Brock Bowers as a blocker when you look at the way he runs routes and breaks tackles and is able to contort his body to make catches. But, you know, this is a guy that's moving in a really good direction right now. To your point, the media, the NFL analysts, they do like to be critical. It's very different than recruiting. Whereas in recruiting, you want to focus on all the strengths of the young man. When it goes to the NFL combine and the NFL draft, they want to look for every, as you mentioned, you know, perceived weakness or potential concern. It's almost like they, you know, the guy that's left standing is the one that has the fewest marks against him. What's his medical history? What's his size? What's his attitude? What was his production like? What's his height and weight? How does he fit, you know, what we have projected at these different positions? So, you know, Brock is a guy, though, that I think is head and shoulders above any other tight end in the draft. And to me, I would almost just look at him as a playmaker. I know Kyle Pitts was drafted very high by the Atlanta Falcons, and his production does not yet match his draft area. That may hurt Brock a little bit. But I think Brock is also a different player than Kyle Pitts. So roundabout long answer, but saying I think Brock Bowers could go as high as number 7 in the NFL draft.
Yeah, far be it for me to come to the defense of a lousy stinking gator like Kyle Pitts, but I believe I might blame some of his issues on what I think has been some deficiencies with the Falcons organization, especially the offensive game planning. So we'll see if the new staff can do a little bit better job with some of that. But on your point about Bowers, you know, it's important for me to know, I'm obviously not objective. I'm a huge fan of Bowers. I hope to see him drafted as high as he can possibly be. But, Mike, if I would be to try to be as objective as I could be, like, the one thing I would say about Brock is if I'm an NFL GM, these are the kinds of guys that I want to bet on, the guys that have been productive in college. And, Mike, you know this. I mean, in a freshman season of 2021, he sets a touchdown record at Georgia. He came within an eyelash of being a 1,000-yard receiver in 2022. And on a per-game basis in 2023, an injury-shortened season, I mean, he was as dominant as I think any player in the country last year, you know, catching the football. That he has had a level of production that has totally transcended the tight end position. I think in a lot of ways he's reinvented that position at Georgia, maybe across college football there as well. So since nobody knows anything anyway, and these NFL GMs get these picks wrong about as frequently as they get them right, then I would always bet on production that I've seen in games against high-level competition. And Brock has always had that.
Well, he has, and you got to give Todd Monken a lot of credit. You know, he came in and he figured out right away what he had in Brock Bowers and, you know, started to design some plays around him. I still think he was probably the most irreplaceable offensive player on the two national championship teams. Every defense's game plan started with how do you account for number 19? Is it going to be safety? Is it going to be a linebacker? You're going to give him a good shot off the line and then let him go into somebody else. I mean, there was always a plan. And then Georgia, Monken knew that. So they would do a lot of movement with Bowers, Brandon, because when players move, we know assignments can change. So it was quite a chess match. And more times than not, Georgia football came out on top and Brock Bowers won his individual matchups.
You know, I think that's exactly right. Now, the other first-round pick we sort of know we'll see from Georgia's Amarius Mims, who seems destined to go among the first 32. And then if you're a Georgia fan, and I love our sort of NFL draft party we have on the final night of our Dog Nation cruise, really one of my favorite things we do all year long because I love the excitement when those Georgia names get called. And I think these Georgia fans who are with us on the cruise and our audience at large here, you know, we're hoping to see that third name be mentioned by Roger Goodell on Thursday night. At one point in time, I sort of thought Kamari Laster might be that guy. Perhaps he sort of receded into the background a little bit, and it seems like Ladd McConkey maybe has come into the forefront here. What do you think Georgia's chances are of getting that third first-round pick here this week?
You know, probably close to 50-50. I mean, I think Amarius Mims is a slam dunk, to your point. I mean, it's hard to overlook 6'8", 340 with 16% body fat and, you know, all this upside left ahead. But Ladd McConkey really charged up the list when he went to the Senior Bowl. And, of course, I was down there with Kaylee Manziel, and they I mean, you just can't cover the guy. There was nobody that could cover Ladd McConkey. He was explosive. He caught the ball well. There was really just nothing not to like. His production at Georgia, maybe not the same as some other players at other schools, but we know he had the back injury at the start of this year and a little bit of an ankle injury. And we know he had a little bit of an ankle last year. So, you know, Ladd's gotten nicked up. And yet he's such an explosive player. He's such a good runner after the catch. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs took him at 32. There's a lot of speculation. Obviously, the Chiefs have had a receiver with some well-documented off-field issues. But I wouldn't think he would fall outside of the top 10 of the second round. I think the Carolina Panthers are probably the lowest landing spot right now that I would say Ladd McConkey would go to.
Okay, so with that in mind then, by the time the second round is done on Friday, have we heard five dogs have their name called? McConkey, Mims, Bowers, and then both Lassiter and Bullard before the second round is done? Is that kind of how you see this playing out?
You know, the position doesn't necessarily warrant that. Yeah. It's not as valued as cornerback when you look at where guys go in the draft. And yet I saw where Mel Kiper Jr. had elevated Javon Bullard to be his number one safety in the NFL draft, which is just really remarkable.
That's great.
And just speaks so well for Javon. And, you know, of course, the defensive MVP of the two playoff games in 2022. I mean, this is a guy that got better and better and better. I mean, I think he'll always be known for the Marvin Harrison hit. I think that probably saved the national championship. Playmaker, breaks on the ball quickly. I mean, you see the size, the build, plays behind his pads well. He's going to be able to come up and run support. Great attitude. He's vocal leader. I think Javon Bullard is I think he will go in the second round. I don't feel as strongly about that only because of the position. Cornerback, a lot of them are going to go high. And I think Kamari Lassiter, even though he ran a 40 time that made some people nervous at the Georgia Pro Day, which I don't know, depending on whose stopwatch you're talking about, it was between, you know, mid 4.5s and mid 4.6s. Well, what they didn't realize was the turf in Georgia is about a tenth of a second slower than it is in Indianapolis. And so that's kind of the inside scuttlebutt on that. So there may be some people trying to downplay Lassiter. I'm not biting though, Brandon. These teams, they put out misinformation. They want guys to fall in the draft. It behooves them the later they can get Kamari. But I mean, Kamari is another guy. I mean, he just gets such great length, moves so well, good speed, plays the ball really well, fundamentally sound, not a guy that's going to get you beat with blown assignments. I think Kamari Lassiter goes second round and Bullard will go late second, maybe early third.
Okay, well, worth watching. How about beyond that? Because I think we're expecting up, what, 9 Georgia players perhaps getting drafted, which means there could be some real valuable picks in kind of the middle to late rounds. Who do you think, you know, relative to where they could be picked, could have the most value? It might be easy to mention a Cedric Von Prawn here just because that's a guy that I think you and I both would say has the potential of being a long-term starter in the NFL. It's almost one of those things of, if he's that easy to diagnose as kind of a bulletproof prospect, then why is he going to be taken so late? But nonetheless, Van Pryn's perhaps an easy answer here. But beyond that, who are some guys that you think middle to late rounds out of Georgia could prove to have some real value as the weekend stretches on?
Wow, I guess Kendall Melton, Marcus Roseme, Jack Sane, and Tyke Smith. I'll start with Tyke because I was blown away by his 40 time. Like, I didn't realize that he was going to run a 4.440 at the combine. And Tyke really kind of grew as he was at Georgia. You know, he came in from West Virginia that first year and had the foot injury. And then the next year, got injured again. I think it was maybe injured in fall camp. And then I think the Auburn game tweaked it again. Never really got to see the best of Tyke Smith until this year when he led the team in tackles and interceptions. And then he goes to the combine and runs a 4.4. 40 to back it up. Now, he was a star at Georgia, the name of the position there, extra DB, if you want, nickel.
Yeah.
I don't know that the value of a nickel justifies a second day pick, but I would be shocked if Tyke wasn't off the board by the end of the fourth round. Marcus Roseme, Jack Sane didn't run a good number. I mean, he doesn't have that straight line of speed, but he's got great hands. He plays special teams. He'll be a great value player for someone. Just by signing him, even if he doesn't get drafted. I tend to think he will get drafted, though. And then finally, Kendall Milton. You know, Kendall really closed last season on high at the back half of last year. He was on fire. I mean, he was in the end zone, seemed like twice a game. And his attitude about opting in was really infectious. I think that shows something to a team that you got a guy like Kendall Milton in your locker room. It's a healthy thing. And I think he has big upside, Brandon. I think he could be a better pro than college player. I think there were times we saw sparks from Kendall. Just not sure he was able to quite put it together at Georgia the way he might be able to put it together if he's in a good situation in the NFL.
What you're saying is exactly what I was thinking. You know, I've been obviously following Georgia football my whole life, and there is that list of guys who just turned out to be better pros than they were at UGA. And I think that Kendall battled some injury. And it's important to note, throughout the time he was battling those injuries, you know, Kirby Smart never, you know, suggested anything other than Milton was working as hard as he could to be as healthy as he could be. He was always, you know, I think, fairly complimentary in that respect. But the end of his Georgia career, Kendall was healthy and, as you said, playing very well, incredibly motivated. I almost wonder if he doesn't go into his NFL future with a lot more momentum as a player than he had for a lot of the time that he was at UGA in a crowded backfield. And obviously Georgia's spreading the ball around a lot. You know, I think if you could kind of make a list of who were some guys that could be better in the NFL than they were for the totality of their college career, I believe I would probably say that about Milton right now.
Sure. Yeah, and I think they diagnosed why he was having some of those soft tissue issues with, pulls and whatnot. And I think they said it was, dehydration. They feel like they put their, wrapped their arms around, the issue that caused the soft tissue issues. And we saw Kendall really come into his own at the end of the year. He's a powerful guy. Here he is at, 225, 230, with breakaway speed. I think he'll only get better and better and better as he grows into an NFL program. And the sky's the limit. You're right. Georgia was frustrating at times, but he also had injuries. He also had sprained knees injuries a couple of years in a row that really limited his effectiveness in his carries.
Yeah. Mike, it's great stuff. I love the draft, and I know you've been kind of all over that and continue to be. Connor and Ronnie got some great videos up at dognation.com on a lot of that too. So we're using y'all to get ready for what's going to happen starting Thursday and continuing on throughout the weekend there as well. And we certainly appreciate you being here as a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management here today.
All right. Thanks, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really great stuff with Mike Griffith there. Great to have him as a part of the program here today. And as we talked about, great to be on board Allure of the Seas with Mike as we kind of move towards the NFL draft on Thursday and all of that fun. And speaking of Mike and Allure of the Seas and our Dog Nation cruise, let's remind you that we're continuing that here right now and having a great time doing it. In fact, tomorrow we know is our day to be at Perfect Day Coco K. And I can't wait for that. It's one of those things, if you're watching a video, you see some of the scenes there, the chill side of the island with the floating cabanas. Look at that. It's almost like being like Bora Bora. I mean, you got the, if you look closely, if you're watching on video, you'll see the slides on the cabanas that slide into the water. And I mean, just an unbelievable experience. And I'm telling you, that Bahamian water, you don't get more clear than that. You don't get more beautiful than that. Just a wonderful experience. The thrill side of the island with the tallest water slide in North America and all the fun there. Just an extraordinary experience. Oasis Lagoon, largest freshwater pool in the Bahamas. Just so many things that make Perfect Day Coco Cay a wonderful, wonderful experience. Now, as we get ready to go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, let me also remind you to make sure you check out Jessica Slater, because if you missed our Dog Nation cruise, you don't want to miss out on your own opportunity to take a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation here in 2024. So reach out to Jessica. You can email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com, and she'll get you booked up and ready to go for a great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation experience here in 2024. Maybe it's the new ship, Icon of the Seas, or the newest of the new ships, Utopia of the Seas, that debuts in July. She can tell you all about that. Okay. So as we get ready to go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, I want to do this. We've been doing it the last couple of days. Just kind of fun. You know, it's become a little bit of a vacation show tradition for us. We don't have a ton of vacation shows, but when we do, it's become a little bit of a vacation show tradition for us to welcome in Kaylee Manziel and do what we call Kaylee's Corner, which is a chance to sort of flip the script a little bit and allow, instead of me asking the questions in the show, she asks questions back to me. I thought that was kind of a fun thing to do this week, to kind of combine Kaylee's Corner with cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. So Monday and Tuesday, Kaylee's been doing a great job of asking us some SEC-themed questions. And so we're going to give Kaylee a chance to do that here now. Kaylee, welcome back to the program. We're happy to have you here. A little bit of a wardrobe change for you since we last saw you. For me, it's like 3 days worth of wearing the same clothes, which people are not happy about. But nonetheless, we're doing that to kind of keep a little continuity here. But I'm glad to have you and glad to now cede the floor over to you for wherever you want to take it as a part of Kaylee's Corner here today.
Well, Monday was all about coaches. Yesterday was all about individual players. Today is going to be all about BA's crystal ball predictions.
Okay.
I know that you keep up with a lot of these Twitter or X accounts that have predictions for how the SEC will end up at the end of the year. So I'm going to get your predictions, and we're going to start with, who is an SEC team that's going to finish the season better off than most people assume?
For me, that's Oklahoma. And I think we talked about Oklahoma a little bit earlier this week. I think of all the teams in the SEC, the team right now that's being talked about the least compared to what I think they can be is Oklahoma. And that's not playoff team or anything like that, but I do believe that Oklahoma is going to be a factor. And what we know is in the new schedule, every team in the SEC is playing either Texas or Oklahoma. And obviously, if you drew Texas, and Georgia did, of course, you feel like you've gotten the tougher end of that arrangement. And for the most part, that's probably true. I believe that Texas is obviously a very good team this year. But I do believe the teams, the thing they got to schedule break because they're only playing Oklahoma, and through 2 years of Brent Venables, that hasn't necessarily been that big of a deal. I think they may find a much more formidable challenger than they realize. A, you're talking about year three of Brent Venables coming off a year in which they did beat Texas a year ago. And as we've said, I think the emergence of Jackson Arnold perhaps as a quarterback there, I think that Oklahoma, relative to the current chatter they're getting, is probably one of the more undervalued teams in the league here at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely think that Oklahoma is being overshadowed by Texas coming into the SEC. There's a lot of conversation around Texas, and therefore Oklahoma's gotten lost in that mix. But now we're going to flip the script. Who is an SEC team that's going to finish worse off than most people are saying?
I think for me, it would probably be Ole Miss. And I've been wrong about Lane Kiffin plenty, and people will point that out, and they're right to do so. My argument about Ole Miss, though, is this, is that for a team that has done a lot of work in the transfer portal, and perhaps you're looking at a team that maybe doesn't quite feel the same level of team chemistry because these are guys that have only just now gotten to know each other, what happens when adversity strikes? For instance, Georgia plays in Oxford in November. I believe that could be a very different Ole Miss team by then than what it feels like right now, because if there is any kind of injury, if there is any kind of, you know, loss that's unexpected, Do guys who perhaps who were kind of only at Ole Miss for a payday now start thinking about a potential even bigger payday of moving on to the NFL, or in some cases just transferring somewhere else during a day and age, which we think there are unlimited transfers? I'll give Lane Kiffin credit for this. I thought Ole Miss was a real football team last year, and I thought getting to 10-2 with that team against an SEC West schedule was a real accomplishment for Kiffin. And if somehow they could match that this year, they'd make the playoff, and it would probably be the most significant accomplishment in Ole Miss program history. And I'm not saying it's impossibility for Ole Miss. When I look relative to expectations, who could just have the toughest task, even against a schedule that sort of seems on paper like it might be a little bit easier, Ole Miss is the first team that comes to mind for me.
All right, you know, this last question, I try to throw you off the course. I'm really, really excited to see what you have to say.
All right.
As a woman, I am sometimes ashamed to admit that I love gossip. I love spilling the tea. And last year, when this whole Michigan thing erupted in our faces, it was like I couldn't get enough of it. So I want to know, in your opinion, who is the SEC team that's most likely to go through a scandal this season?
All right, scandal. So if we're going, can I include, you know, coach in the hot seat on that, or you want something more juicy?
No, that's you. Yeah. You can take this however you want. I just need a real good scandal, because it's bound to happen with this many teams in the SEC now.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. And I think that if Texas were to, and I think they're actually handle this okay, but if Texas were to have a bumpy road moving to the SEC, that's going to feel pretty scandalous for a lot of their fans, because I think there's still a little bit of what do we really have at head coach with Steve Sarkisian? So I think their transition year creates the opportunity for some of that. But I would watch for what's going to go down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, because I think that LSU is a team that for the good or for the bad, we're not really talking about very much right now. And I think that relative to expectations, they might be a little undervalued. But Kaylee, here's what you know, is that Brian Kelly came to LSU because he knew he'd never win a national championship at Notre Dame. He also took the job after there were rumors that Lincoln Riley, maybe that wasn't quite for him, a little bit too much of a challenge. But the last three coaches at LSU have all won national championships. Ed Orgeron did, Les Miles did prior to that, and Nick Saban, of course, did prior to that. So the standard for Brian Kelly is to win a national championship at some point in time. He's moving into year three. What if they're not a playoff contender this year? That's the one sort of like air quotes here around scandal, because it's not any kind of like, you know, crime or anything like that. But in terms of a fan base that could get fired up pretty quick, if LSU, and by the way, their schedule not quite as daunting as some of the teams that are out there, LSU could be one of those spots where I think you do see a lot of fan hysteria in a way that I don't think people necessarily have that on their radar right now. But that's a place I would definitely tell you to watch out.
If there is anything that I've learned from watching reality TV, it's that scandal continues to breed scandal. And there's probably no SEC program that's had more scandal over the last decade than the University of Tennessee. And with as much pressure as Josh Heupel's going to be under this year to keep Tennessee within that top tier SEC program, that would be my one to keep an eye out on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Kaylee. And I'll just finish by saying this. Sometimes when you have what sort of feels like a big breakthrough season, you know, get to number one, obviously it kind of fell apart after that. But when you start going the other way, it sort of feels like things are happening in the wrong order. You have a very, by Tennessee standards recently, a very good season, followed by last year kind of a little bit of a step down. If it's not something that sort of feels like a step up, after a certain point, doesn't it sort of feel like at Tennessee things are starting to happen kind of in the wrong order there a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, they peaked, went back down, and I think with the coming in of Texas and Oklahoma, there's going to be a lot of pressure on that Tennessee program, especially since they've always kind of fell into that 2-3 spot in the SEC East. But now that there's no SEC East or SEC West, some teams are going to get lost in the mix, and Tennessee doesn't want to be a program that does.
Well, Tennessee may have peaked too early, but you have not. We think the best is yet to come for you. That means back here tomorrow for one final edition of Kaylee's Corner here as part of Cruise Around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Kaylee, we certainly appreciate your time. And before we wrap up here on this particular Wednesday, let me give you a shout-out to our friends at Dr. Pepper. You know, earlier, last week, we had a great golden shoe themed around some of the really fun new stuff coming for Dr. Pepper here this summer. And I love the fact that our audience loves Dr. Pepper as much as I do, because it goes great with college football, but it also just goes great with whatever I have going on a daily basis. You always kind of need that pick-me-up throughout the day, and for me, That's really Dr. Pepper. So as you're shopping at your local Kroger or wherever it is that you're picking up your groceries, I want you to pick up some Dr. Pepper, whether it be Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar or Dr. Pepper Strawberries and Cream or any of the exciting new flavors that are on the way. It's a pepper thing, and it's time for you to enjoy some here today. And of course, no golden shoe for us here right now. We'll get back to those next week. Got a pre-recorded show for you tomorrow, which we think is going to be really good. Jeff Sintel does some great stuff with UGA recruiting for that. Then Friday, as you know, a little bit different type of thing for us. We're stepping away from Dog Nation Daily. I don't give up the microphone very easily, but we're going to step away from Dog Nation Daily because it doesn't make any sense to do a pre-recorded show the day after the first round of the NFL draft. You just need to be able to talk about that. So our Cody Chaffins and Connor Riley, two of our designated survivors sort of staying back and not going on the Dog Nation cruise, they're going to recap the draft and look ahead to the weekend. So that'll be fun on Friday. And that means we'll catch you back up here on Dog Nation Daily on Monday. So that'll be really good, you know, in our normal video spot there at 10 a.m. And, of course, we'll see you back on the podcast again on Monday. Lousy, stinking Gators. How about a Gator hater updater? 1,264 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.